Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge, and we are glad to have you with us this morning. In this part of Focus 580, we will return to a subject that certainly we have discussed before on the program, and that is solar energy, and talking a little bit about active solar here. We're talking about photovoltaics, not so much passive solar, but active solar, what it is, how it works, where we stand now in the state of Illinois, and perhaps nationally and internationally with solar as a contributor to our energy needs, and where we might go with solar, what sort of potential it is. And we'll be talking about all of this morning with Angus Rockett. He is a professor in the Department of Materials Science and Engineering here at the U of I. In fact, he is the associate head of the department. And we're glad that he could spend a little time with us here in the studio. And, of course, questions are welcome. The number, if you're here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line. That's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. So at any point here, if folks who are listening have questions, you give us a call, and I know he will take his best shot at answering your questions. Again, 333-WILL and toll-free 800-222-WILL. Well, thanks very much.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
As a way of starting, can you talk a little bit about, if you say, look at, let's say here, just look at the United States as a whole and ask how much of the electricity now that we're using is generated in this way? What is it?
It's relatively small. It's a few hundred megawatts or something like that, probably. I don't know exactly in the U.S. It's a modest amount of energy. The main thing to realize is that the industry is growing at 40% a year. So if you take where we are today and you sort of extrapolate out and say, well, when can this be significant? The answer is by 2030, we could be generating worldwide 10 terawatts of energy, which is a great deal of the electricity that's generated worldwide today. Mm-hmm. So the answer is within 20 years, at its current growth rate, we could be essentially globally the way of making electricity with photovoltaics. And a few years after that, at the same growth rate, you'd get to the point of generating all of the energy that we use. Mm.
And I suppose people would even say that if we found some way to accelerate the current growth rate and sort of bump it up, our time horizon would get even closer.
Well, certainly, yeah. 40% is an extremely fast growth rate for any industry. It's the rate at which nuclear energy grew in the 1950s and early 60s and so forth. It's the rate that wind is essentially growing, something like that. Total installed wind capacity is growing very fast as well.
And if you look at other countries, I'm sure that it's the case that in other countries they've made a more significant investment. And so the percentage of energy that's generated by solar in other places, it's looks like, from what I've seen, significantly more than it is here in the United States.
There's a lot of energy generated by solar worldwide, mostly in Germany and Japan. And you can sort of tell why it is that those countries are investing. They have very little domestic energy resource. Mm-hmm. So they really don't have a choice. They are dependent on other countries. In this country, of course, we have a lot of coal. We have a significant amount of natural gas. And so there's much less motivation to invest in alternate energy technologies. You really get to the point of saying, is this economically competitive head-to-head with my existing technology? And the answer is solar is becoming that way very rapidly.
Yeah. It's my understanding that the technology that we're talking about here is not new. The first solar cell, I believe, was invented in the late 19th century, and then the silicon cell is more than a half century old. It was actually invented at Bell Labs here in the United States. So it's not like we're talking about something that we don't know how to do. So then you wonder, well, why is it that all this time that this technology has been around, why is it that, at least here in the United States, it makes up such a small percentage of our energy production?
It's because you are competing with an energy that is literally dirt cheap. I mean, coal is dirt, essentially. You dig it up out of the ground, you dump it in a hopper, you burn it, and you get energy out of it. And that's extremely inexpensive. So we're faced with competing head-to-head with a few cents a kilowatt hour for wholesale electricity. Now, fortunately, solar is different from wind, for example. So with wind, if you think about the big wind energy farm near Bloomington, they have to sell to the electric power grid, which means that they're selling at wholesale prices, a couple of cents a kilowatt hour. And so unlike a consumer here who might put an array on their roof where they are competing at their electric meter price. Mm-hmm. So if I offset my household electric meter, I'm essentially getting retail price for that. So if the power company is charging me 10 cents a kilowatt hour at my meter, then all I have to do is offset 10 cents a kilowatt hour with my solar array and I'm fine. Whereas the wind turbine has to sell to the grid and then the grid sells it to me. And so it's much more difficult mm-hmm. with wind.
Well, as a, and again, this is a real general kind of question, and I don't know how complicated the answer is, but as a technology that, say, again, a difference between solar and wind is that for solar, you could put solar panels on your roof. Probably a lot of people might not want to or couldn't put a wind turbine in their backyard. So it's something that is actually feasible for an individual to have on their house. So you could look at it that way, but also it is possible that you could build a sun farm, a solar farm, if you had the space. You know, you could go out in the middle of the desert in Nevada and you could put out as many solar panels as you wanted to and generate a large amount. Is one or the other of those things, do you think, a better sort of application of the technology?
It's much more satisfactory to put the array on your own roof because, again, you're competing with your own energy bill right at your house. There are a number of differences to think about with wind and solar in general. So, for example, wind is much more economical when you build a really big wind turbine and build a lot of them close by. And so you have this big wind farm like the Horizon Farm near Bloomington. Solar is perfectly capable of being a very small installation. So you can mm-hmm. put a few solar modules on your roof and you can offset part of your power bill right away. So it's relatively easy to do. It can be done small scale. It can be done individually and has just as good in general economics. The big difference is if I want to have an installer living in my community, if I want to have someone who dedicates their life to installing solar arrays, I need to have enough market for them. And that's the case in California. It's the case in a lot of areas in the Southwest. It's not so much the case here because the market hasn't really moved into this area yet. It's not that it can't. It simply hasn't. And we're working toward that. There's essentially a grassroots movement in Champaign-Urbana to try and look at getting a large amount of solar installed, in which case one could expect the price to be lower. And perhaps other people in the community could then piggyback on that effort. Now that you have an installer in town putting a big array in, maybe you can, you know, keep them here by individuals.
Just one other question, and then I've got a caller we want to get to. Certainly in a lot of the things that one reads about solar, you do read people talking about the potential for solar farms. And, you know, they say things like, well, there is so much energy just pouring off the sun that it hits the earth every day, that considering the size of the surface of the earth, you know, with a relatively small space, essentially satisfy the need for power of the entire earth. You know, you read stuff like that. So that theoretically, you actually could do that.
Even the state of Illinois, which is hardly our best solar resource in the country, would meet all of our domestic energy demands. If you put solar in the state of Illinois and covered most of the state with solar cells, you could meet our energy demands. Now, obviously, mm-hmm. you wouldn't want to do that. We have great farmland. Why would you want to put solar cells on it? But when you think about the area necessary to make energy by solar, this is by far the smallest amount of energy of area required for any technology, less than wind, less than hydropower, less than biomass, and so forth. So it's a very efficient way of converting sunlight into a directly usable form of energy.
Our guest in this part of Focus 580 is Angus Rocket. He is a professor of materials science and engineering here at the U of I. He's the associate head of the department. We're talking about solar energy and its potential nationally here in the state of Illinois. You have questions, you can give us a call. We have somebody here ready to go. And our number in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Your caller is in Geneva on our line four, the toll-free line. Hello.
Yes, good morning. Mm-hmm. I actually picked up a magazine on solar and wind, and I think it's a good idea. Of course, I grew up in the Southwest, in the desert Southwest, and my folks still live out there. And you would be surprised how much wind generation they got out there. It's like every hill's got a turbine up there. So my whole idea is, and I don't know, maybe you can think I'm crazy about this, but I want to be able to at least get either off the grid or close to it by doing both wind and solar. But I've talked to a number of people up here, and they've said it's impossible for me to get anything back out of solar here because we have too much cloudy days. And I kind of find it hard to believe because I've seen other people with it on their houses, and I've never stopped to ask them, but the theory is in some of these big companies that like a heating and cooling guy you talk to, they all seem to think it's a waste of my time. I'd never recoup the cost because it would cost you, it would take you 8-10 years as now trying to recoup the cost of how much it, you know, would cost me to put it up there.
Yeah.
And the second thing, as far as wind, I think wind for a private homeowner would probably be the thing to go because I've seen, again, back in these magazines, they sell, I think it's the magazine's plug-in or something like it. It's a science magazine. You can buy wind generators for your house, and they're really not that big a deal. But, see, the problem is then where you live in rural area, urban settings, subdivisions, they've got codes that won't allow you to do this. So it's kind of null and void. Same thing with solar. They won't allow you to put these things on the roof. So, you know, it's like the homeowner in general has already kind of shut down some of that, unless you live way out in the farm fields, like where you guys are at down south. It's kind of hard for me up here to do anything. And I was wondering what your comment on that is. And maybe you can shoot me in the right direction, because I want to, my next house is going to be totally solar. I'm trying to get off the grid. So I think I'm tired of this, you know, power outages and whatnot, and I think it's probably the best way to go. Thanks.
All right. Well, we might indeed have to, we can find somebody to talk about wind, because I'm not sure that that's necessarily your thing.
Well, I can comment somewhat. Okay. I mean, the problem with wind, as the caller says, it's generally difficult to put up wind in any urban area because the turbines are, you know, there are various codes that would restrict turbines. They make some noise, not a lot of noise, but they do make noise. So that's a concern. Solar, most communities that I know of will allow you to put up solar on your roof. They may not want them sort of scattered about your yard or something, but I think a subtle roofing, you know, solar array can be done. This sort of brings up a couple of things that I wanted to mention for people who are interested in doing a solar array for their house. There are a limited number of installers in Illinois that you can go to, but I would refer you to the National American Board of Certified Energy Practitioners, NABCEP, the North American Board of Certified Energy Practitioners. Their website is www.nabcep.org, and they have a map where you can find installers in your local area. So they're a general resource for finding that. And then the question of financing, you should consider options for incentives on renewable energy of all sorts. And there I would refer you to www.dsireusa.org, the database of state incentives for renewables and efficiency. And that's a place where you can go and find out in your area. And of course, we're in Illinois, but nationally, you can find out all the incentives for your area and you can look them up. And I also wanted to mention that the Kankakee Community College is establishing a program to train installers of solar systems. So I think we're looking at a lot of growth in the area. And anybody who's interested in learning how to install renewable energy systems, I'd encourage them to contact the Kankakee Community College.
Yeah. Well, let's come back to another question that Carl asked, because it's the kind of thing that when we talk about this, it comes up over and over again. And that has to do with the amount of sunshine that we have in Illinois. And some people would say, you know, if you were in Nevada, that's one thing. But in Illinois, there are parts of the year when it's cloudy a lot, and that means that in the state of Illinois, solar just doesn't make a whole lot of sense because we don't get enough sun.
Okay, so there's several answers to that. First of all, for every 10 square feet of roof area that you have, you can probably expect about 150 kilowatt hours per year of electricity production per 10% efficient solar array that you put up. So if you put up a 10% efficient solar array, 10 square feet would be rated at something like 100 watts. So for every 100 watts of module you put on your roof, you can expect 150 kilowatt hours per year. That tells you, based on the size of your roof, and that assumes a south-facing roof and tilting the array at the right angle, but roughly speaking, if you have a south-facing roof, for every 10 square feet, you could figure on 150 kilowatt hours. So if you use, you know, 900 kilowatt hours, you can figure out how many square feet of roof you need. And that will be the average over the year. Now the question is, are you grid connected or are you trying to get off the grid? So if you're really trying to get off the grid, then you need the storage capability to be able to store that energy when the sun's not shining and get it back. Most people are perfectly content to say, well, when the sun is shining, I'll sell power to the grid, and when it's dark, I'll buy power back from the grid. And in fact, power is most expensive from the electric power utilities in the middle of the day, in particular on that hottest day of the year in the summertime, because that's the day that everybody turns their air conditioner on, and that's the day when the electric utility has to turn on that power plant that's been sitting around all year waiting for that one day of summer when they need the extra capacity. So the public utilities are paying for capacity much of the year that they can't use because they don't have demand for it. And so solar actually matches the demand pretty well. Mm-hmm. So the power companies, at least at this point, are not particularly unhappy about buying power from consumers when they make it with solar and selling them power back at night and so forth. So that's not really a problem. But you can figure on about 150 kilowatt hours for 10 square feet of roof area. Mm-hmm.
Just, again, I have other calls. I want to get back to them. But I'm curious now. It's my understanding, and maybe I'm wrong about this, is my understanding that the power company charges the same per kilowatt hour on, you know, that hottest day in the year, you know, 3 o'clock in the afternoon on the 4th of July, as they do at midnight on December 30th. They're right. Charging, you know, the demand does not affect the price.
Well, that's how it comes out in your bill normally. You can actually adjust your bill so that it is based on demand. So you can pay a power price that fluctuates with demand, and the big power consumers do this. Mm-hmm. And that's possible. This actually makes solar more interesting because if you then net meter, so you're putting power back into the grid and you're paying, the power company is paying you for net metering at the local power price. So if you're selling power to the grid in the day when it's expensive, you can buy more power back at night when it's cheap if you do that. And there are systems that will allow you to do that.
Yeah. And we still, though, it sounds as if we still do have an issue. And again, it goes back to some of the other things we talked about. Do we have people to install? What's the demand? You know, how many people are buying panels? And so what does that do to the price? It still seems to be the case that now it's a pretty expensive proposition, and that for most people it would take 10, 15, maybe 20 years for them to recoup the investment.
Okay, so let's talk about how you think about this. Okay, one way is to think about this as, when do I recoup my investment? And the answer to that is, at the moment, do it for love, not for money. Okay, the industry is growing, and there are technologies at the moment where the price per watt for manufacturing is under a dollar a watt. Now, you can't buy installed solar for under $5 to $10 a watt installed, really, which means that somebody's making a lot of money, which is why the industry is growing so fast. When competition increases, as the industry grows and competition increases, we're going to get to the point where profit margins on manufacturing solar go from 200% profit to 10% profit. So instead of selling that module that costs you a dollar to make for $2.50 or so, then maybe you're selling it for $1.10. And maybe you reduce the price even further. That's likely to happen. So maybe you're selling for a dollar a watt. The break-even price for installed solar in this area in central Illinois is about $3.60 a watt, roughly speaking. So if you're paying more than $3.60 on a 20-year lifetime product, you're probably not going to make your money back. Mm-hmm. Okay, there's another way to think about this, though. You look around the street and you see people who've bought $50,000 cars. They didn't need to buy a $50,000 car. A $15,000 car would have gotten them around just fine. So instead of buying that $50,000 SUV, if you bought yourself a $25,000 Prius, you'd have another $25,000 that you could put into a solar array on your roof. And you don't ask yourself, what's the payback time on my SUV? You bought it because it was cool. Okay, so we just need to think of solar arrays as being cool. And if the coolest thing to do is to have a solar array on your rooftop, then you'll put a solar array on your rooftop and you won't think about it any more than you think about, well, should I buy another car? Because the cost of a solar array is, roughly speaking, similar to a car. But unlike the car, the solar array lasts for 20 years on your roof. The car you might get rid of in 5 years. Mm-hmm. So really, you know, the idea of break even on the price is somewhat of the wrong way to think about it.
At least at the beginning, it's going to have to be people are going to have to do it because they think it's the right
because it's cool
because it's the right thing because they want to do it.
Right.
Of course, that still comes around to the problem that there are some people who would say, you know, I don't have the money for either the solar panels or the SUV,
and that's okay because we don't make enough solar panels just now to address everybody just yet. Mm-hmm. In a few years, we will. And that's so the technology exists at a price that's such today that if the manufacturers were willing to accept a 10%, 15% profit margin, we could do it today. But they don't need to because the demand so much outstrips the supply.
Yeah. All right. We have some other callers here. Let's talk with someone in, we'll go to line three, and that is someone in Champaign. Hello.
Hi there.
Yes.
A couple of things I've asked the guest to address today. One is small solar, sort of like light emitting diodes. We've seen an increase in use in larger and larger applications for solar. So you used to see them in expensive electronics installations, and now you see them powering things like road signs on the freeway. And I think a lot of people think of solar as sort of these giant arrays out in the desert, when in fact some of the technology may be creeping in around the edges. You can get solar watches and power vehicles to a certain extent on solar, you know, auxiliary batteries and boats and so on. That's already being done, and that's kind of pushing the technology. And I guess the other question or thing to comment on would be sort of infrastructural, the changes in manufacturing. I know there's a company that's developed a relatively new process that's cut the cost of manufacturing for, I think, thin film amorphous cells. I don't remember the name of the company, but the manufacturing cost has dropped pretty significantly. And some other infrastructure stuff, as energy companies have shifted from purely oil to being sort of broadly based energy companies, I think this changes the political climate. And I guess the final thing to comment on is our transmission grid up to all this. So I'll hang up and listen. Thanks very much.
All right.
Well, finishing up with the last part, the transmission grid, actually solar helps the transmission grid a lot because you produce the energy where you need it, especially when you install cells on your own roof. In terms of small versus large and so forth, a solar watch works because the watch consumes something like a nanowatt of power. It's some incredibly small amount of energy. Same thing for a solar calculator. So you can use a small, inefficient solar cell and get all the power you need. Why are highway signs showing up with solar cells on them? It's because economics says it's cheaper to put a solar array on your relatively isolated billboard than it is to run a piece of copper wire to the billboard. And the break-even is at about 800 watts average load for a half a mile of transmission line in central Illinois. So you wouldn't run a wire a half a mile to something that averages a few hundred watts load. And that's why, just for straight economic reasons, that's why solar cells are showing up on billboards. So most of the places you see solar these days are because either people want to do it and therefore they're buying it as if it was a car, for example, where they're not thinking about the price, they're thinking about, I want to do this. Or they're doing it for straight economic reasons, which is why they're showing up on billboards. It's not because people who own billboards love to be green and solar. It's because it makes economic sense. And that's really the transition. You know, you can be as green and environmental as you want, and you're not going to grow a big industry nationwide on it. One of the things that you learn when you've been working in solar energy as long as I have is you need to sell based on hard-bitten economics and not based on feel-good sort of attitudes. And that's really the thing that's changing these days, is people now can sell solar cells for a price that's really competitive in more and more areas.
And what about the – can I ask a question about new developing, upcoming manufacturing techniques that lower the cost of
right.
the product?
So this one industry manufacturer that I've referred to is making solar cells for $1 a watt. It's a polycrystalline thin film technology. The company's based in Toledo, Ohio. And they are growing very rapidly. They were essentially nobody 5 years ago. They are likely to be the world's largest manufacturer of solar cells in a year or two. So the price breakthrough that they have achieved has caused their market to completely explode. And so now if you say, well, when they get big enough and start selling solar cells for $2 a watt, that will force the silicon industry, which is the 900-pound gorilla in the room currently, to sell at a much smaller profit margin. And there are changes in the silicon industry that are coming along that are going to also affect the price of silicon, although maybe not as dramatically. And there are competitors in the thin film polycrystalline technology that are likely to drive the price down and be competitive as well. So there are a lot of changes coming in the market. The big question at the moment is really, how fast can everybody ramp up? How fast can we meet the demand so that it becomes a buyer's market instead of a seller's market? That's really what's going to drive the change, because we've already got the technology to be cost competitive today. We really do. It's just a question of, can you convince the manufacturers that they should bring their prices down? And that's a matter of they just, you know, they're smaller, they're building everything and selling everything that they can make, and the profits that they're making are driving an expansion of the industry.
Hmm. Our guest in this hour of Focus 580, Angus Rockett. He's a professor of materials science and engineering at the U of I and is the associate head of the department. We're talking about solar energy, and questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Our next caller is on our line, how about line number one in Champaign? Hello.
Hi. Yes. First of all, those websites you referred to, I'd like to get the first one, but you never said .com, .net, .org.
www.nabcep.org, .org.
Okay. Anyway, you mentioned earlier about, you know, a solar plant, solar generating plant. We have farmland. Why we want to burn that up? I mean, to me, there's lots of extra area that we could use, like the side ramps of the emergency ramps along highways or in between the highways. Couldn't you run solar panels along there, top of malls, maybe the extra parking areas, stuff like that? Why couldn't those areas be used for putting solar panels in?
Absolutely. That's a perfect place to put solar panels. And if you think about here in Champaign, we have a large mall in the north end of Champaign, the Marketplace
right.
Mall. You put structures in that would shade parking at Marketplace and cover them with solar arrays, you can produce probably the majority of the electric power that Champaign-Urbana consumes during the day. So we have plenty of land area that we can use. Providing covered parking for malls would be perfect. And so absolutely, you can do that. It's just a matter of cost.
Right. That was going to be, I would imagine you have to put some sort of acrylic over it so the weight of a car or whatever could go over the top of it if they needed that area. Okay. Well, and the other thing, solar plants. I mean, okay, when it's dark at night, how do they produce energy?
Well, you don't produce energy. Solar is a what's called a peak power generating technology. It generates power when we use most of it during the day. And you need to produce nighttime energy, you need another source or you need a storage technology. And
right. The storage, I guess, would be what I was asking about.
We're fairly far away, I think, from a practical large-scale storage technology. This is an area of major research, and there are a number of things you could imagine doing. Batteries, if you have a laptop computer or have worked with any kind of rechargeable battery, you know that it's very difficult to tell how much charge you have in your battery, and it's really difficult to use. So batteries are not a particularly ideal storage technology at the moment, although there are some interesting changes coming in the battery community. You can talk about flywheels. Nobody's really working very much on flywheels at the moment. You can talk about making hydrogen and so forth. So there are a lot of people working on these technologies, but there really isn't a very satisfactory solution so far.
Right. And the other thing about putting a solar panel on your house, let's say you do that, just for sake of people out there, if let's say something happens to you, if you want to sell the house, you've already bought the solar panel, you could use it as a selling point for the house. The next purchaser wouldn't have to buy the solar panel.
That's right. It adds to the value of your house.
Right.
And you need then to identify a buyer who wants a solar module on their roof and is willing to pay the extra money for it.
As years go down the line, that depreciates in cost. So, I mean, it could be a plus side down the road. Increases at your house.
Absolutely. As power becomes more expensive, it also shelters you from increases in power costs and so forth. So, you know, there are a lot of reasons to consider it.
All right. Now, do they build solar panels that combine maybe, I would think you could run some sort of water system underneath the panel because the heat that would be generated could also heat my water.
You certainly can.
Most
of the time it's combining those technologies has not really been terribly attractive so far, mostly just because people who want solar electric don't necessarily want solar thermal and vice versa. So usually if you wanted to do that, you'd buy a separate solar thermal system for your house and a separate solar electric system for your house. I would say anybody who's looking at either of the technologies should ask themselves, okay, how much hot water do I need? How much electricity do I need? How much am I willing to pay? Solar thermal is a very efficient way of making hot water. There are some complications with it in our area because of the freezing temperatures we have in the winter, but those can be dealt with. So I would certainly say it's worth looking at solar thermal. If you're buying a small solar thermal system and a solar electric system, you might ask yourself, would I be better off buying the solar thermal system or just buying a larger solar electric system and using the extra electricity to heat my water?
Sure.
When you come into all the extra infrastructure of piping and pumps and all that kind of thing for the solar thermal system, for a small system, it gets somewhat expensive just because of all the piping and pumping and so forth. So you might be better off with an extra solar module or two.
All right. Well, thanks for your time.
Thanks. And I just, you know, maybe this almost goes without saying, but, you know, here in the state of Illinois, we do have things like ice storms and hail and high winds and snow. Are the panels, are they robust enough really to stand up to everything that nature can throw at them?
The solar panels have 4-millimeter thick glass on the top of them normally. That's the sort of industry standard, and it's designed to withstand sort of normal-sized hail up to maybe golf ball-sized hail.
Mm.
If you had a hailstorm that would be big enough to, say, destroy your car or something like that, seriously damage your house, it would probably damage your solar array as well. And that's what insurance is for.
Yeah, all right. Other calls here. Next, we'll talk with someone in Chicago. On line four, hello.
Thank you. Following up about the weather on the what if snow is on the panels? What if there's a way of eliminating snow for it to continue to function?
That would be a problem. I haven't really looked into exactly what the effect of snow is. In certainly in downstate Illinois, we probably don't have snow on the roof enough to...
I guess they would have to be tilted at an angle so that gradually it would sort of melt off and slide off.
Yeah, the solar module is almost 100% absorbing of sunlight, which means it gets pretty warm even in the wintertime. And so you could imagine that once you get the snow down to the point where some light can get through.
Well, I was going to ask you about the solar vehicles. I just saw an announcement of a vehicle that's solar-driven, power-driven, and it gets up to 75 miles an hour, and it's completely solar-powered. Have you heard anything about that one?
Well, I've actually participated in two solar car races where the University of Illinois built solar cars and joined in a race from Indianapolis to Denver. And if you build a car that's sort of the size of a 1960s station wagon, you know, a really big car with lots of roof area, and you don't mind driving under somewhat uncomfortable conditions and you're one person with no amenities in your car, yeah, you can drive pretty fast. I mean, the winning cars in those races were driving
high. My question is, are these allowed for most municipalities to be driven?
I don't know of any reason why you couldn't get them certified for the road. I mean, that's more of a roadworthiness question. The big problem is even with a big car, you've only got about 1 horsepower to drive the car on. Under more or less ideal sunlight conditions. So you are pretty limited in terms of what you can do with a solar car.
One more far-out question. Some people say the sun has been rather dormant in terms of solar flares. If there were some exceptional flares beyond the range of the measuring, like solar, what do you call it, X-flare, would, like they said, they would affect the satellites and... other things that are in orbit and melt down their circuitries and even endanger the astronauts to such that they have to go into lead special chambers. What the solar flares would do to solar panels, I don't know.
Only in space. So there's essentially no effect on Earth any more than you or I have to worry about solar panels on the surface of the Earth.
I just recently heard of a... announcement just last week of someone in Colorado having something called solar systems that heats and cools up to 500 to 600 square feet simply by putting this unit in the window, and it gives you all the function that you would want for heating and cooling, and only a couple dollars a day. So I just saw there's new technology out there that is coming along. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. We have about 10 minutes left in this part of Focus 580. Again, just very quickly, let me reintroduce the guest, Angus Rockett. He's professor of materials science and engineering at the University of Illinois. He's an associate head of the department. We're talking about solar energy, and we'll try to get in as many callers as we can in the time that's left. 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Next up, we'll talk with someone in Watseka, line two. Hello.
Yes. I at one time heard that there was solar shingles, and I wonder if that technology is cheaper, and would there be installers to put it in? And then another part of the question would be, could that solar power run the tubing that goes under tile to keep floors warm? I wondered if there was anything that you might be know about that.
Yes, certainly there are solar shingle technologies. People have developed solar cells that look like a shingle, and there are several companies that are exploring this currently. The problem usually is that you add a little bit of extra price when you do that. The bigger and simpler you can make the module, the less it costs, and you get down... When you're trying to compete with coal power and so forth, you really get driven down to what's the absolutely simplest thing I can do. And so there are solar shingles. They tend to be somewhat more expensive. Most of the technologies you can buy today are not solar shingles. They're glass-covered modules and so forth. There's a rollout amorphous silicon technology from United Solar. And so there are various options depending on what you want your roof to look like. But the shingles tend to be more expensive and more complex, and they're not really any easier to install at this point. 5-10 years from now, they may be a very attractive product. But today, they're not really the way to go. And in terms of using solar to provide floor heating, radiant floor heating, yes, you can certainly do that. The best way to do that would be with a ground loop heat pump, for example, and pumping the heat in, heating your floor during the day, and then when the sun goes down, you just let your house gradually cool overnight. And if you improve the insulation, your house will probably stay warm enough overnight that you can get by till the sun comes up the next morning.
Thank you so much.
All right, thank you. And we'll talk next with someone in Urbana, line 3. Hello.
Hi there. Mm-hmm. I had heard that there was some kind of a film that they were developing that was picking up solar panels. It would be almost be able to put in glass panes of windows and things like that. And I wondered about that. And the second question was what kind of skills does it take to become an installer? Is it really complicated process? What kind of technology is needed to do that for yourself, if it's possible?
Okay, so let me take the second one first. How do you become an installer? It's like becoming an electrician, a specialized type of electrician work. And again, I would refer you to the Kankakee Community College for courses in this. They're developing a whole series of training courses that will leave you certified for installing. You can do it yourself. Typically, the power company and your insurance company will let you do things yourself. But if you want to sell the house, you'll have to have the system inspected. And you should talk to your insurance company and so forth if you do it yourself.
So it takes electrician. It takes at least the skill level of a qualified electrician.
I would say that would be a good estimate, yeah.
Okay.
And then let's see, your first question.
The films that they were talking about. And
you mean like
was an NPR reporter heard a few months ago, and it made it sound like they had been able to get electricity from thin films of some kind of thing, and they were able to attach to services. Sound like they could put it on cars or anything is what they kind of alluded to, but I don't know.
Yeah, there are thin film technologies, some of them on flexible surfaces. The United Solar Avonix technology is a flexible amorphous silicon technology, and these products vary in their efficiency and so forth. There are some new approaches that give you higher efficiencies with flexible surfaces and that sort of thing. If you get away from the amorphous silicon product, you start getting quite expensive.
Okay, and sure. Yeah.
The amorphous silicon product is comparable in price to most of the other technologies per unit power output, but is somewhat less expensive, somewhat less efficient. And so it takes more roof area for the same amount of power, but it costs about the same amount.
There was a talking point that was on recently where people were talking about if they could cover all the roofs with white paint, that we could eliminate global warming. And so it was just a buzz that was going around. I don't know if it's true or what it was talked about. But what would solar panels do to that? If we replaced all the roofs with solar panels, would that have the effect of a better effect, or how would it work? Or
well, the main thing that you would do is you'd reduce the amount of carbon you'd need to burn to make electricity, and the carbon in the atmosphere completely overwhelms things like parking lot areas or anything like that. You know, we've put in a lot of parking lots, and parking lots are pretty black and absorb a lot of sunlight, as you know, if you've walked around one on a hot summer day. And putting in solar cells probably isn't so different from putting in parking lots in terms of its effect on the environment. But if you can cut down the amount of carbon that you put in the atmosphere, you certainly would have a bigger effect.
Is the white paint thing have any validity?
Well, of course, you can change the reflectivity of the Earth's surface, but you'd have to change an awful lot of the area. And one of the things that's happening is that the polar ice caps are melting, and when the ice cap melts, the poles become much less reflective, and so
That's pretty
big. We're putting a lot of heat into a lot of land area, a lot of sea area up around the North Pole all the time, so that will dwarf any kind of white paint you could put on.
Hey, thank you.
All right, thank you. Atlanta, Illinois, next, line number one. Hello.
Good morning, gentlemen. Mm-hmm. One thing, I live in a passive solar house, and the amount of sunshine in the winter is not really good. 55% of the time in the last winter, anyway, was the amount of sunshine that was available in Illinois, and a lot of that was not in the winter. The question I have for you is that I've tried seriously was going to install a windmill here, and I'm in an area where there is a wind farm just a couple miles away, so that is a possible idea. And the electric company would not take the extra electricity. I didn't want to use batteries. I just wanted to be on the grid, and any electricity I could make, I would want to put back on the grid and get credit for it. And the electric company that I belong to here said that that was absolutely impossible. Our meters here did not run backwards, and I know earlier when I was investigating by law in Illinois, there was no reason, you know, there's no law that said they had to do that. So my question is, has that changed?
I'm not sure. My impression was that there have been changes in the law. I wouldn't want to say what the current law is because I haven't checked right offhand, but my impression, you can go to your public utilities website and see what they will do for net metering. I believe Ameren has a policy that they will buy a certain amount of power, but they have limits on how much they'll buy, and I don't know the details. So you'll have to speak with your public utility about their policy.
So that still could be a problem as far as the transition to what we've been talking about.
I don't know your local area. I know that a lot of people can net meter in our area, but I don't know your specific case. So I'm afraid I'll have to refer you to your power producer.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thanks. But it sounds like that still could be something of an issue. We would need to change out the meters, and then we'd need to have some sort of agreement with the power company that says, all right, if you're generating more energy than you can use at any given time, we'll take some of it, maybe we'll take all of it, and we'll give you some kind of credit, but it might be a one-for-one kind of a deal, but we'll give you something.
My understanding is in most areas of Illinois that it's possible to do net metering and, in fact, to do demand-based pricing on your net metering so that you sell at the prevailing power price at that time of day, that there's a limit to how much you can sell at any given time, and maybe the callers was talking about a wind turbine that's bigger than what they will accept in terms of power. And there may be some other restrictions. Certainly, the power company will not send you a check. You know, you can at most net meter what you buy over an average time.
Right now, so we talked a little bit earlier about the cost right now of someone putting solar panels on their roof, and about the fact that it's going to be, at least at this point, it's going to be something that people are going to have to decide to do because they want to do it. Because they think it's a good thing for the earth, or that it's cool, or you know, for whatever.
Do it for love, not for money.
Do it for love, not for money. That's right. And at least right now, that's going to have to be the reason that people do it.
I would say a good ballpark for break even would be $3.60 a watt installed, and that's about half to a third of what you currently would pay.
Right. And right now, is it possible to make a rough kind of estimate of what? Say what the cost would be to get the panels, have them installed, get everything set up for, you know, your average homeowner?
A typical value people would talk about today would be $10 a watt. So if you buy a 1,000-watt system, that would cost you $10,000.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's expensive. 5,000-watt system would be adequate for most homeowners, and that's $50,000. So that's getting expensive. Smaller arrays will generate part of your power and so forth. So it's really, you can look into it. It's expensive at the moment. You don't do it because you want to make money just now.
Yeah.
But I think that the technology is changing rapidly. The economics is changing rapidly. And with the breakthroughs that have occurred recently, I think we will quickly be in a mode where you can do it and save yourself money in a real way. But that's not the case today.
And in the meantime, though, it sounds as if we decided this was a good thing for people, you know, to encourage people to do it. There would be some people who could afford to do it. It sounds like, though, there are other people who maybe would consider doing it if you could do something for them. You could give them a tax credit. You could give them you could do something to try to bring down
right. And
the cost.
And so if I can just take the last couple of moments to mention again these two websites for incentives, for all of the incentives in renewable energy and efficiency nationwide, www.dsireusa.org will list all the federal incentives. And, of course, in some areas that can really make it advantageous to buy solar. And, for example, California, that's why so many people buy solar modules in California. It's not just because they have good sunlight, but because they have enormous incentives to buy. And then if you're looking for an installer in our area, www.nabcep.org.
All right. Well, there, for the moment, we'll have to leave it with our thanks to our guest, Angus Rocket. He is professor of materials science and engineering and is the associate head of that department here at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you having me.